is we're giving an idea as to how this class is going to unfold. So we're not really going to do a large number of Mishnayos. In fact, we're going to do relatively few Mishnayos, especially when it comes around the Yamim Tovim. I hope to be able to deal a little bit with some of the Yamim Tovim as well. And you're going to see we're going to learn the Mishnah, and then we're probably going to take a couple of classes to kind of delve into the history, and then we'll spend a couple of more classes delving back into the Mishnah. So with that, let's begin. So this is Perek Dalet Mishnah Chaf. I'm not going in any particular. I'm going in the order of the Mishnayos that I find the most impactful. So let's begin. Perek Dalet Mishnah Chaf. Elisha ben Avuya Omer. Elisha ben Avuya says, Halomet Yeled Lemahudome. If one, so again, chapter 4, Mishnah 20, source number 1. Elisha ben Avuya says, if someone learns Torah as a child, although the truth is, Halomet just means what? One who learns. The truth is, I said Torah, although the truth is, we'll save that for later on. One who learns as a child, l'mahu domeh, l'dio k'suva al niyar chadash, like ink on a brand new piece of parchment. V'halomit zokin l'mahu domeh, and if one learns when he's older, to what can he be compared? L'dio k'suva al niyar machuk. Like ink written, so literally the English translation over here is smudged paper. But niyar machuk literally means what? Erased paper. Okay, so before we go on, what is Elisha ben Avuya saying? Simple idea, what is Elisha ben Avuya saying? Why? Good. Easier to learn when you're young than when you're older. Why? Because it's new and it's fresh. Good. What else? Excellent. Absolutely correct. What else? No wrong answers, I promise. Yes?
Because like when you're older, you're more like fixed in your
ways. Excellent. If you notice again, Elisha ben Avuya makes the comparison to the piece of parchment. So the truth is, most of you are probably not so familiar with parchment. But the way parchment works is, when you write on parchment, so what ends up happening is the ink, see, if you ever look at the opening of a Sefer Torah, it looks like the letters sit on top, which is true, they're raised, but the ink also seeps into the parchment. When you erase, can you erase parchment? Yes, how do you erase parchment? Right? You scrape off the letters. Now, interestingly enough, what happens when you scrape off the letters? First of all, you remove part of the parchment, right? And number two, if you've ever seen erased parchment, it looks different than clean parchment. So what Elisha ben Avuya is also saying is this idea that when you're young, have you ever heard the term tabla rasa? Tabla rasa means, anyone know? Blank slate. You're a blank slate. When you're young, you're a blank slate. As you get older, you're no longer a blank slate. As you're older, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's been written on your slate. This is why children in general are more impressionable. It's just a function of life experience. When you're young and you have less life experience, so the parchment is clean. So whatever is put on a clean parchment seeps in and takes hold. As you get older, so every single life experience writes something on your parchment. So if you want to go ahead and erase that experience and write something new, can you ever fully erase your life experiences?
No.
And this is going to be a very important point. You cannot, because even if you erase your parchment, what happens? What happens? There's, first of all, you might not be able to get off all the ink. Second of all, even if you do, the parchment is erased. The parchment looks different. That erased parchment, meaning you could clear the surface in order to write something new on it, but at the end of the day, that parchment is not new. That parchment is still, I don't want to call it smudged, because you could remove all of the ink, but it's erased. Remember again, I think I mentioned this just before, when you erase parchment, you also end up removing part of the parchment as well. You can't just erase the letters. You take off some of the actual parchment as well. So Elisha ben Avuya, on the most basic level, seems to be extolling the virtue of what? Right? Learning when you're young. This is a good lesson for all of you to learn. Take advantage of youth. Because there are certain things that you could accomplish when you're young that maybe you will not be able to accomplish when you are older. Okay, interesting Mishnah. First, again, there's a lot to say on this idea, which we'll talk about. But what strikes you immediately when reading this Mishnah? What What strikes you immediately? And therefore? Oh. Elisha ben Avuya is perhaps one of the most enigmatic characters, one of the most enigmatic personalities we have in the entire Gemara. And in fact, you will be hard-pressed to find Elisha ben Avuya quoted by name, because Elisha ben Avuya was often referred to as Acher, for reasons we'll discuss, as the other. It is fascinating to note that one of Elisha ben Avuya's teachings is incorporated in Pirkei Avos. Elisha ben Avuya, as we're going to see right now, becomes, to say he became an apikoris would be an understatement. Elisha ben Avuya is off the reservation. Elisha ben Avuya literally again severs all ties to the Jewish community, again to the point that when his fellow rabbinic colleagues would refer to him, they would not refer to him by name. They would refer to him as Acher. You know, there's a group of people that we don't refer to as name. Who else don't we refer to as by name? There's really only one other person who we don't refer to by name. Yeshu, right? Yeshu. So people think that Yeshu is a Hebraicized form of Jesus. It's not true. Yeshu is an acronym for Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, that we don't even refer to certain people by name because of the collateral damage that they caused to Klal Yisrael. You know, we say Haman, you might say Haman Harasha. We'll say Hitler, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro. There are only like very few people who we won't go ahead and mention them by name. And one of the two is Elisha ben Avuya. Yet, amazingly enough, despite that, he is mentioned explicitly by name in Pirkei Avos. By the way, not only is he mentioned by name, but he's mentioned by what name? By what name? By his actual name. Meaning it doesn't say Acher Omer. Rather, it says Elisha ben Avuya Omer. So which already tells us that there's something dramatic unfolding over here. So now, we're going to put the brakes on the Mishnah a little bit, and we're going to take a step back and go into the story of Elisha ben Avuya, a story I'm sure which many of you are familiar with, but we're going to add in a couple of twists and turns. So the story begins in number 2. Tanur Rabbanon. So the Gemara says, Gemara Maseches Chagiga. Arba'a nichnesu bepardes. 4 people entered into the pardes. Pardes literally means what? Garden or orchard. Now, there's a machlokes Rashi Tosas, which we're not going to get into right now, but whether this was a, well, prophetic journey. In other words, did these 4 rabbis actually go somewhere? Like, was it a physical journey or was it a prophetic spiritual journey? So again, Rashi understands it to mean Alul Rakia de Hashem in number 3. Rashi understands it to mean literally they ascended heavenward. Tosis understands ultimately again Kigon number 4, Kigon Ayyide Hashem below Alul Mala Mamish Elohaya Mira Lahem Kimosha Olin. Okay, it's not really material to the story. I'm just pointing out to you, is Machlokis Rashi Tosis, this view between Rashi and Tosis over here, did they actually ascend, physically ascend to the celestial sphere, to the heavens? Or did they just simply have like a prophetic experience? Back to number 2. Arba nichnasu pardes. 4 people, 4 men went into the pardes. Who were they? But one thing is clear, that what does the pardes represent? What does pardes represent? Okay. Sorry?
A journey.
You're thinking too much. Hey, what does it mean? It represents some area of close access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whether it's Gan Eden, Olam Haba, Olam Emes, whatever it is, the point is they're entering into the inner sanctum of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are experiencing a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is something surreal. Who are the 4 men who went in? Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, and Rabbi Akiva. So if you notice already over here, the Gemara calls him Acher, not Elisha ben Avuya. So Rabbi Akiva is the Rebbe of the group. In fact, we're going to see Elisha ben Avuya's Rebbe was Rabbi Akiva, which is something very, very, very important to us, which tells us, when does Elisha ben Avuya live? When does Rabbi Akiva live? Good. So Rabbi Akiva, remember again, is alive at the time of the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva was the major rabbinic backer of which revolt, of which individual? Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba rebellion occurs when? Good. Excellent. 60 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Why is the Bar Kokhba rebellion important? Because remember, when the Romans destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash, was there religious persecution after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash? Not really. Meaning the Romans thought that ultimately when they destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash, so kind of Jewish life would collapse. There was still persecution, there was financial persecution, there was some level of spiritual persecution, but not as intense. With the Bar Kokhba rebellion, where the Jews, by the way, almost won, you have Rabbi Akiva coming out and essentially proclaiming Bar Kokhba as the Mashiach. Very dramatic. Bar Kokhba proclaimed himself as the Mashiach, and Rabbi Akiva seemed to agree with that particular assertion. The Romans realized that the Jews are not collapsing, and that a period of intense spiritual religious persecution begins, known as Hadrianic persecution. Why Hadrianic persecution? Because the emperor of Rome at that time was a man by the name of, take a wild guess, Hadrian. Excellent. Right? So Hadrian. So my point over here is you understand, now that you begin to understand when all of this is unfolding. So this is in the aftermath of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva is gathering a new group of Talmidim. Elisha ben Avuya is one of them. They're going up to the paradise. I'm going to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says to them, Kisha'ate magien etza avne sheish, we're not going to get into the details over here, but Rabbi Akiva gives them a series of directions. Essentially, what Rabbi Akiva tells them is, you're going to see things in the celestial sphere that you're not going to understand. So what I need you to do, Rabbi Akiva says, is be quiet. Don't say anything over the course of this journey. Don't open your mouth. Don't say anything. Just simply observe. That's the advice Rabbi Akiva gives them. What happens? So I'm still in number two, three lines in, right after the period. Ben Azai hits its umes. Ben Azai, now whatever this means, Ben Azai looked around and he died. So it sounds like, but whatever Ben Azai saw was too much for him to ingest, and so he dies. Ben Zoma hits its venifka. Ben Zoma literally looked. Vinifka. Nifka means something snapped inside of him. You know, the English translation over here is became demented. Something, he went crazy. He went crazy from the episode. So, Acher, Kitzetz Benetios. Acher, now this Lashon is very interesting. Kitzetz Benetios literally means what? He uprooted, a netia is a sapling. He uprooted saplings. We'll discuss what that Lashon means in just a little bit. Rabbi Akiva Yatza B'Shalom. What does that mean? Rabbi Akiva Yatza B'Shalom? Rabbi Akiva was okay. So amazingly enough, these four great Rabbanim have this incredible spiritual experience going up to the paradise. Three out of the four are negatively impacted. One dies, one goes crazy, one is uprooting saplings. We don't know what it means, but we know what? It's not good, right? Whatever it is, because we know it's not good. It's bad. So, and Rabbi Akiva is the only one who comes out shalom. He comes out whole. So this is the well-known Elisha ben Avuya story. So why is he called Acher Kitzetz Benetios? Why is he called ultimately, again, that he uprooted saplings? So take a look. Take a look for a moment. I'm going to have you skip just a second. Sorry. Take a look at number six. Actually, so skip down a little bit. So the Gemara says as follows. Actually, you know what? Turn the page. So Elisha ben Avuya, again, I'm purposely skipping part of this Gemara because it alludes to something else. So we'll come back to it in just a moment. And I want to share with you, sorry that we're going out of order here a little bit. Okay, so why is he called Acher Kitzetz Benetios? So we're going to discuss what happened, but skipping the impact of the Pardes, Acher comes back from the Pardes with one, quote-unquote, in quotations, truth ingrained in his mind, which is, less din, veles dayon. What does less din, veles dayon mean? There's no justice, and there's no judge. So the incredible anomaly here is that Acher has an experience in the Pardes, which was supposed to be an experience of unprecedented closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not only does it backfire, but it has the polar opposite effect. Acher goes, presumably, to find a newfound closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and instead he comes back thinking that there is no God. There is no God. Actually, I'm sorry, I'm going to have you skip for 1 second. Take a look for just a moment, number nine. So this, before we get to the Acher Kitzeitz Minatios. So in number nine, this is the Medrash in Rus Rabbah. The Medrash in Rus Rabbah has a different Elisha ben Avuya story. What's the Elisha ben Avuya story? Amru. One time, so it was Shabbos, Acher is sitting and he's learning in Ginosar. You ever hear of Ginosar? Where's Ginosar? If you ever took a trip up north in Eretz Yisrael, so if you notice, again, especially if you take the Jordan Valley Road, so you pass by a place called Ginosar. Now I think it's a kibbutz or it's a moshav. So the Gemara Maseches Brachos discusses Ginosar. The fruits of Ginosar were the sweetest fruits in Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, again, they were so sweet that what? You could not eat the fruits by themselves. You had to go ahead and usually eat it with a piece of bread, which is why it's discussed in Maseches Brachos in the sixth Perek, because the Gemara discusses if you're having a piece of Ginosar fruit and you're having it with a piece of bread, what's the Shaila? What's the bracha? Do you have to make a hamotzi on the bread? Or is it a din of ikar v'tafel? I don't really want the bread. I'm just eating the bread to blunt the sweetness, a little bit of the sweetness, ultimately, of the piece of fruits. That's why it brings up, so the Gemara asks, so why are the fruits of Ginos are so ridiculously sweet? Why are they so sweet? So the Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara says, because in this world there are multiple entrance ways to Gan Eden. One of them is in Ginosar. So because the entranceway of Gan Eden is there, somehow the sweetness or the beauty of Gan Eden trickles into the physical Ginosar, endowing the fruits with an incredible sense of sweetness. The reason I'm saying this to you is because I've always thought it's dramatically amazing that the episode that we're about to read occurs in Ginosar, which is one of the entranceways to Gan Eden. So watch this. So Acher, so excuse me, Elisha ben Avuya is sitting and learning in Ginosar. Vira Adam Echad Sha'ala L'Rosh HaDekel V'Natal Ha'im Ala Abanim V'Yarad B'Shalom. So you have to imagine this scene. Elisha ben Avuya is sitting learning in Ginosar. Beautiful. And what does he see? What does he see unfolding in front of him? It's Shabbos. He sees a man climb a tree, go ahead and take the eggs out of the nest while the mother is still there. So what did this man do? Right? So he did two things. Number one, right? How was he Michal Shabbos? Climbing a tree. Now granted, climbing a tree, is it a Doraisa Dirabanon? It's a Dirabanon. Right? It's a Dirabanon. Right? Remember again, the issue of climbing a tree or any kind of use of a tree on Shabbos is a gzera. It's a concern that one may come to detach part of the tree. Now detaching part of the tree, of course, would be an Isser Doraisa, a biblical prohibition. But he goes ahead and he climbs a tree. Fine. Isser Dirabanon. And then after doing the Isser Dirabanon, instead of sending away the mother bird and then taking the chicks or taking the eggs like you're supposed to do, Shalech Tishalach Esa'im V'Esa'banim Tikach Lach, the Mitzvah Shiluach HaKein, what does he do? He leaves the mother there and he takes the eggs or the chicks, whichever one it was. What is it? Minat La'im Al Abanim V'Yar B'Shalom. And what happens? The guy comes down and totally fine. Nothing happens. Okay. People commit Averis all the time, unfortunately. But Matzei Shabbos, Elisha ben Avuya is still sitting there learning on Matzei Shabbos. Ra Adam Acher, Sha'ala L'Rosh HaDekel, V'Natal HaBarim V'Shalach HaSaim. So Matzei Shabbos, he sees another guy. This guy obviously waited till after Shabbos. Furthermore, he climbs up the tree, gets to the nest. What does he do? What does he do? He shoos away the mother bird, and then only then does he go out and take the eggs, take the chicks. The Yarat, he comes down the tree. V'Hikisho Nachash Vames. And in such like a ridiculously, seemingly random situation, this guy comes down from the tree, he's bitten by a snake, and he dies. Amar Ksiv, Shaleach Teshlach HaSa'im V'Savanam Tikach Lach L'man Yitav Lach V'Harachta Yomim Heichon Tuvol Shalzeh V'Heichon Arichos Yomim Shalzeh. So what did Elisha ben Avuya just see unfolding in front of him in the course of one Shabbos? What did he see? In one sentence, what did he see? Excellent. Sadik viralo v'rasha v'tovlo. In one, literally again, in one afternoon, Elisha ben Avuya sees a guy who flagrantly violates Dinei Doraisa, Dinei Derabanan, and he comes down from the tree and he's absolutely fine. Whereas the second guy, who presumably waits till the end of Shabbos, shoos away the mother bird, comes down from the tree and just out of nowhere, just a poisonous snake comes and bites him and he dies. So Elisha ben Avuya sees this. And the conclusion he comes to ultimately again is less din v'less dayan. There's no order to the world. There's no order, meaning there is no God. There is no Seder. There is no order. How does the world work? How does the world work? Stuff happens. Just stuff happens. There's randomness, right? That's however it's told. You know, some people are lucky, some people are unlucky, some people have mazel, some people don't have mazel. But less din, but less dayan. There is no God who choreographs and orchestrates the world. Because in Elisha ben Avuya's mind, if there really was a God, how could it be that he would let the person who committed the Avera ultimately just be fine? Whereas the guy who is trying to be mindful of the halacha, just, again, such a random death, being bitten by a snake coming down from the tree, it leads Elisha ben Avuya ultimately to feel there is no God. Now, the Medrash does add in one more piece. If you look at the last three lines in number 9, V'yesharmim, by the way, you don't have to wait till I finish talking, you can ask questions at any time as well. V'yesh omrim, al yedei shera'a l'shono sh'rabi huda hanachtum nasan b'fiyakelef. There's another possibility. Remember again, this is why historical context is so important. One of the most dramatic edicts of Hadrianic persecution was the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 great rabbinic leaders who were murdered. They were not all murdered at the same time. They were murdered over a course of a number of years. We group them together. So the Medrash says the other possibility is that Elisha ben Avuya saw the tongue of Rabbi Huda Hanachtum being eaten by a dog. Amar im halashon sheyaga b'torah kol yom of kach l'shlashon she'ene yodua ve'ene yaga b'torah achas kama v'kama. So Elisha ben Avuya says, I don't understand. Could it be that the tongue that spent so many years learning Torah, the tongue of Rabbi Huda Nachtum, which was spent steeped in kedusha, is now going to be consumed by a dog? So Elisha ben Avuya says, Amar im kein lo matan schar l'tzadikim. Last line, number 9. Elisha ben Avuya says, after seeing all of this, there is no reward for the righteous, v'lo tchias ha-mesim. And there is no resurrection of the dead. So, yes.
Is this trying to
explain why he lost all of them? Yes. Meaning, what's happening over here is Chazal trying to figure out, Elisha ben Avuya, you know, in life, you have to operate with a basic premise. What is the most important basic premise to operate with in life? This is like a good fundamental question. Most important basic life premise, if you want to be a successful person in this world. I'm sorry? Good. That's always an excellent, right? You can never go wrong with that answer because it's always correct, right? Absolutely. Leaving aside basic fundamental theological truths. Schar v'onesh, reward and punishment. Every action has a reaction. Good. Absolutely. On an interpersonal level, what you have to believe is people are good. You have to believe people at their core are good. Because if you don't believe that, if you don't believe that people are good, then what's the alternative? Then people are
bad.
If people are bad, then what? Then good luck forging any type of meaningful relationships in life. So, but how do I reconcile the fact that if I believe in my heart, at their core, all people are good, but people do bad stuff every single day? So how do I reconcile those two facts? So the reconciliation is, I believe people are good, and when people do bad things, there's something else going on with them. There's, you know, everyone has this experience, and maybe you have it with a friend of yours or a family member, where they speak to you in a way that's just like so inappropriate or so not good, and your first reaction is, oh, this never happened to anyone, Baruch Hashem. Wonderful, Zachisan. Right? The first reaction is, wow, you must be having a really bad day, because that's very out of character for you. Why are you talking like that? Why? Tell me what happened. So people in general, if you believe that people are good, then when they act out, you have to ask yourself a fundamental question. What is happening in that person's life that is causing them to act a certain way? Now, again, I want to be clear. That doesn't excuse anyone from personal responsibility. Even if something bad is happening in your life, if you act out, you are responsible for acting out. You're responsible for your actions. So Chazal trying to understand over here, Elisha ben Avuya was not just a good man. He was a great man. He wasn't just a great man. He was one of the tzaddikei hadar, one of the righteous men of the generation. So Elisha ben Avuya, we have a simple question, which is, what happened to you? What happened to you? And it must have been something traumatic. And it must have been something overwhelming. Because to be going from the tzaddik hador, we're going to see what Elisha ben Avuya becomes. To go from the tzaddik hador, ultimately to acher. So you see Chazal trying to understand what occurred. Now, by the way, I will tell you, these accounts need not to be mutually exclusive. Meaning it's also possible that what? Maybe they all happened. Maybe they all happen. Maybe the Pardes happened. Maybe Ginosar happened. Maybe seeing the tongue of Rabbi Yehuda Nachtum happened. Maybe it all happened. And maybe it's just like this perfect theological storm that kind of coalesced around Elisha ben Avuya. But bottom line is, seeing some of these things, all of these things, leads Elisha ben Avuya to one, what he feels is an incontrovertible truth. Which is, and again, if you look over here, lo matan schar letzadikim, there is no reward for the righteous. Lo tchias hameisim, there is no resurrection of the dead, which means what? Which in simpler terms means what? There's no God. There's no God. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents is a framework. The Ribono Shel Olam is a framework. Ribono Shel Olam is our God. And with that comes a framework. What's the framework? There's schar va'onesh. Schar va'onesh, so again, do we believe that schar va'onesh is always given out in this world in ways that we can understand or we can appreciate? No. But we believe in Olam Haba. So whatever is not corrected in this world, so to speak, is corrected in the next. And whatever is not corrected in the next is corrected in the Messianic era. Tchias HaMeisim. Elisha ben Avuya says, no, after what I've seen, bless you, there is no Tchias HaMeisim, there is no HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no Schar Va'onesh, there's nothing. And all of this leads Elisha ben Avuya to turn his back on Yiddishkeit. How does he become Acher? Go back up to the top of this same page. Right, it's really source number 6, but it begins on the previous page. We're just looking at the bottom of this page. So what does Elisha ben Avuya say? Amar, ha'wil v'itrit ha'hu gavra me'ahu alma, leipuk lishani b'hai alma. Now, if you believe that in fact, ein matan schar letzadikim, there's no reward, there's no tchias ha'meisim, there's no resurrection, there's no olam haba, there's no schar va'onesh, there's nothing, everything is random, then what? What's the logical next step after that? Do whatever you want, but more importantly, you might as well just then enjoy. Like, if this is it, then you might as well just maximize your pleasure in Olam Haza. Meaning, if I have no Olam Haba, if this is it, if the 120 years on this world is the entirety of my existence, then I might as well maximize it and enjoy it to whatever degree that I can. There's nothing else for me really to look forward to. So what does he do? Nafak acher letar busra. So Acher essentially embraces a very negative lifestyle. Again, so I want to point out, you know, a person could turn his back on Judaism, but still, quote unquote, live a moral, ethical life. Now, the truth is, you can't really, because there's no morality outside of the context of Torah. Torah defines our morality. But okay, but meaning you don't have to, just because he becomes an apikoris doesn't mean he has to become a bad person. But Acher decides, it's not just that I'm leaving Yiddishkeit, I'm going to enjoy a hedonistic lifestyle. In other words, that now Olam Hazeh pretty much becomes all about pleasure. So what happens? Nafak ashkach zona. He goes out and he finds a zona. He finds a zona. He finds a prostitute, a harlot, a zona. Tava. He propositions her. He asks her for her services. So listen to this exchange. You have to imagine this. He goes over to the zona, right? He wants to pay her. Amrale velav Elisha ben Avuya at. So do you hear what the zona asks him? The zona, you see, even a zona has standards, right? So the zona says, excuse me, like, aren't you the Gadol Hadar? Like, aren't you Elisha ben Avuya? I mean, this is like a little bit awkward for both of us, no? Can you imagine? He's getting Musar from the zona. He's getting Musar. You understand how low you have to be to get Musar from the zona? So she says, aren't you Elisha ben Avuya? Akar Pugla Mishra B'Shabbos. So here's what's amazing, by the way. When is this episode happening? Again, Shabbos. We're going to talk about this. There's seemingly so many of the traumatic events of Elisha ben Avuya's life occur on Shabbos. So this is happening on Shabbos. What does he do? Akar Pugla Mishra B'Shabbos V'Yavla. So literally translated, he pulled a radish out of the ground. Now the act of pulling a radish out of the ground on Shabbos is what? Is what? Is the malach of koter, the malach of ktsira, oker davar mimakom gidulo, when you lift something out of the place where it grows, is one of the lamentas malachos. So essentially, what does Elisha ben Avuya do? What does he do? He's publicly, he's mechal Shabbos before Hesia. He publicly, he's mechal Shabbos right in front of her. Meaning, if you notice, what doesn't he do? Right, he doesn't answer. He doesn't say, oh no, you must, yeah, people say that to me all the time, they look like Elisha ben Avuya. No. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say a word to her. He doesn't say a word to her. Instead, what he just does is, I'll show you. I'll show you that I'm not Elisha ben Avuya. How am I going to show you that I'm not Elisha ben Avuya? He is mechalo Shabbos right in front of her face. Amra, so what does she say? Acherhu. You must be someone else. And that dramatic, Elisha ben Avuya doesn't say a word, doesn't say a thing. All Elisha ben Avuya does is through his actions, he shows, I am not who you think I am. And this Zona says to him, oh, Acherhu, you must be someone else. And this Acher is the new name that defines Elisha ben Avuya. He's no longer Elisha ben Avuya. Who is he? We don't know who he is. All we know is that what? He's someone else. Acherhu. Who you are, what you are, I don't know. But I can tell you that you're no longer Elisha ben Avuya. And this, because I can't tell you, like, this is such a dramatic episode. Yes?
Sorry.
I'm sorry. We're in source number 6. But it's the end of source number 6. So it's the section right before source number 7. Does that make sense? Literally those lines. Like on the, it's on the second page of the handout. It's the lines right on top. Amra hov itrud ha'u gavra. That source. So again, I can't tell you how dramatic this. It's dramatic on so many levels. You see, to me, what's also amazing, although this is not the primary part of the story, what else is striking about this exchange? The Zona, meaning leaving all kidding aside, what does the Zona care who the customer is? Meaning she at the end of the day, this is what she does for. But it's an incredible idea as well. We don't know who this Zona is, but even the Zona, and we're going to see this with Elisha ben Avuya as well, everyone in life has their boundary. Everyone in life has that line that they're not going to cross. You know, for some of us, the line is here. For some of us, the line is over here. But everyone has that boundary. They say to themselves, you know what? I can't go beyond this, because if I go beyond this, that's the point of no return. Even the Zona says, I do what I do, but at the end of the day, you're Elisha ben Avuya. You're Elisha ben Avuya. Even I, the Zona, am uncomfortable with that. Elisha ben Avuya doesn't have words to describe where he's holding in life. He has no retort. All he can do is demonstrate to her, I am not who you think I am. I am not the man you think I am. How I show that to you? Just through a simple act of plucking a radish out of the ground. That one simple act. No verbal exchange, no words, no explanations, nothing leads the Zona to say, oh, you're someone else. Now whether Acherhu was the Zona's way of saying, I must have confused you with the Gadol Hadar, or the Zona recognizing that maybe once upon a time you were Elisha ben Avuya, but you're clearly not that person anymore. So we begin to see, so first of all, it's dramatic to see that the name Acher at least originally comes from this exchange with the Zona. Yes?
It's an
excellent, excellent question. It's hard to understand. What you're really asking is getting into the head of Elisha ben Avuya. I can't answer that. Much in the same way, if somebody were to ask you why I do the things that I do in life, so you wouldn't be able to answer it. I mean, we just met, you know, 25, 45 minutes ago. But I'm saying, even if it's hard to understand human behavior. because human beings are complex. Is there something that happened to Acher earlier in life? Is, who knows? The one thing I could tell you is as follows. You know, this is in a couple of weeks when we learn about that Rivka Imenu was pregnant with twins. So the pasuk says Vayisrotetzu habanim bikirba. Right? So again, we know, what does Rashi say? What's happening in there? It's Yaakov and Esav. So the Maharal says, I don't understand. Why are Yaakov and Esav struggling in utero? Or is so Rashi has the area when they pass by a Beis Avod Zara, Esav wants to get out, Yaakov wants to get out by a Beis Medrash. What's the struggle? They're babies in utero. There is no Yetzer Hara, there is no Yetzer HaTov in a child in utero. A child in utero is Kulo Kiddusha, it's learning with the Malach. Esav, by the way, Esav was also learning with the Malach. It wasn't just Yaakov had the Charusa time, and Esav was at the pool hall doing whatever. You know, they're both learning with the Malach. So what's the struggle? So the Maharal says something amazing. The Maharal says that Yaakov Avinu was the embodiment of good, Esav was the embodiment of evil. Now, however, whatever that means, good and evil can't occupy the same space. So sometimes what it means is, where you see the incredible propensity for good, there's always that countermeasure of evil. Elisha ben Avuya was the tzaddik hador. So it appears that when the tzaddik hador suffers a setback, it's not just like a setback like me and you would have, which could be a relatively minor setback and then we rebound. But it almost seems like the greatness of the tzaddik when he falls is magnified in the profundity of the descent. That's what I think. But it doesn't, but still, my real answer is, I don't know. Yes?
Also, isn't the greater someone is, the bigger their Yetzirah?
100%. 100%. So it's almost like once Elisha ben Avuya opens the door to this Yetzirah, it becomes like this gaping black hole for him. Absolutely. Absolutely. And yes?
So the Gemara doesn't answer where it comes from?
Where what comes from?
So we're saying, like, stories, which
All we have are these three episodes. The Pardes, Ginosar, and seeing the tongue of Rabbi Yehuda Nachtu, and the story of the Zona. But the three episodes, those are the three backgrounds to what happened to Elisha ben Avuya. So what's clear is, there was a traumatic theological event. Was it one of them, two of them, or three of them? But that's the window into Elisha ben Avuya's downfall. More than that, we don't have. So there is one more Gemara that brings down that when Elisha ben Avuya was younger in yeshiva, so one time he was standing up and some chachmas hagoyim, whatever this means, secular or non-wisdom fell out of his Gemara. So apparently he was studying other things as well. So Chazal don't seem to attribute that to his downfall. That might have been, those are the things that might have put cracks, you know, in his spiritual armor. But when looking as to why Elisha ben Avuya turned his back on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, Chazal attributed to one of these three episodes. So this, you have to understand the profundity of this. Elisha ben Avuya, Elisha ben Avuya was one of the Gedolei Hadar. And not only does he go ahead and turn his back, but he turns his back with an incredible vengeance and venom. Not only does he turn his back on an incredible vengeance and venom, who does he become part of? He becomes part of Roman society. Now, the Romans are more than happy to have Elisha ben Avuya. Why? I'm sorry?
It endorsed him.
Correct. Meaning, remember, this was a coup to have one of the Gedolei Hadar switch teams, leave Klal Yisrael, come to the Romans. So the Romans give him everything. The Romans give him money. The Romans give him a palatial estate. The Romans give him title. So Elisha ben Avuya is now wealthy, is now famous, is now part of Roman nobility. Right? The one thing I don't know, because we just don't have information about it, is Elisha ben Avuya does have a family. We're going to discuss his family actually after his death. We don't really hear so much about his family during his lifetime, but we'll see. We'll see where he has a daughter. We'll see where that comes in later on. So, Elisha ben Avuya, yes?
All right, according to the first episode, when he went in for the Akiva and the other two, what did he see
then? So he must have seen something. Well, you know, the Lashon is Hitzitz. Hitzitz means he looked at something that he wasn't supposed to. Meaning Rabbi Akiva gives them very specific instructions when they go up. don't say certain things, don't look at certain things. Elisha ben Avuya looked at something, which on a basic level means he looked at something like above his spiritual pay grade. He wasn't ready for it. You know, in general, like, you know, we see this when a person wants to come, in general, when it comes to growth, right? So if you want to really grow as an individual, as a Jew, so you have to make sure that your growth is measured. If you try to do too much too quickly, then what? Right? You fall. You fall, you fail, and most people become too demoralized to get back up. So whatever happened in the Pardes, Elisha ben Avuya saw something, looked at something, understood something, or I should say didn't understand something that was way above his ability to spiritually grasp. So Elisha ben Avuya is ingratiated with the Romans, and essentially what happens? The Jewish community cuts him off. Now, because remember, what's also happening is as follows. If you take a look at number 8. Take a look at number 7, because it's in Hebrew instead of the Aramaic and the Yerushalmi. So the Medrash Yerushalmi writes as follows. Elisha ben Avuya cuts its minatio. So remember again, by the way, going back now you understand why does the Gemara, the part of this Gemara in number 2, why did it say, Acher kitzeitz binetios? Why did it use that lashon, that he uprooted saplings? Why did he use that lashon? A reference to what happened with the zona, the radish. The Medrash has a different understanding of kitzeitz binetios, uprooted saplings. Take a look at number 7. Elisha ben Avuya kitzeitz binetios. Ketzad katzeitz binetios. What does that mean, says Rashi? The uprooted saplings. Get ready for this. Bishash shahayin nichnas labati knesios. Umidrashos. Whenever Acher Elisha ben Avuya would enter into a shul, into base Medrash, and he would see children who are having hatzlacha, who are growing in their learning, enjoying their learning. He would say things to undermine their spiritual growth. If you look at the Yerushalmi says, if you look in the first, second underlined line in number 8, Vahava Amr, he used to say to them, Ma'ilein Yasvin Avdin Hacha, what are you children doing over here? He says, come with me, I'll teach you a trade. I'll teach you a profession. You'll make some good money. You'll buy nice stuff for yourself. So what would he do? He would literally lure the children away from Torah. So that, says the Medrash and the Yerushalmi, is the lashon of katzatz benetios. In this context, the netios, the saplings, refer to who? Refer to the children. See, he uprooted the saplings. Bless you. The children are taking root. The saplings are taking root. And Elisha ben Avuya is going ahead and uprooting the saplings. So why is this important? What is it about Elisha ben Avuya? It's not just that he left, but what? If he's making people leave, what does that tell you?
He's like getting revenge.
He's angry. He's angry about something. Meaning, there are plenty of people, unfortunately, Nebuch Rechmona Litzlan, who leave Yiddishkeit. Unfortunately, until Mashiach comes, that's what happens. But people leave for whatever their reasons, and they go on with their lives. They're not actively coming back to shul every day, standing at the door saying, come on, you're a fool, what are you doing? Right? Why are you doing it? They go on with their life. Elisha ben Avuya doesn't just leave. Meaning, again, Elisha ben Avuya could leave, he could go settle in Rome, he's got a beautiful palatial estate, he's got title, he's got money, he has everything he could possibly want. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he goes ahead and he tries to get the children to stop learning. Now, in general, why is that? What do you think that means? You're going to say something?
The children?
Yeah.
It's kind of what we learned in his Mishnah, that he said that the children...
Oh, hold on to that for a second. Good. Leaving aside, excellent. Hold on to that for just a second. In general, you know, if someone is self-assured in their approach to life, what don't they have to do? You don't have to proselytize. You don't have to, meaning, it's an interesting thing. In Judaism, we do not go out and actively convert people, right? We know what we have is MS, and if you want it, we're happy to tell you about it, but I don't have to go out spreading my message. In general, when a person is happy in life and settled in life and in a good place in life, I don't have to convince people of my convictions, of my ideas, of my truths. It's only when people are insecure that they feel the need to make everyone else like them. Secure people, and this is a kal gadol in life, secure people are okay if someone's not like me. Okay, I'm secure enough in who I am, in what I am. I don't need someone else to believe like I do, to practice like I do, to live like I do. I could think in my heart that you're wrong. I could think in my heart you should be living a little bit differently. But I'm secure enough in who and what I am to accept you for who and what you are. When people are insecure is when they need to make everyone like themselves. You have to be like me, because if you're not like me, that highlights the falseness or the wrongness of my life decisions. So what's happening over here? Elisha ben Avuya, who's Acher Elisha ben Avuya, propositions the Zona on Shabbos. Elisha ben Avuya is Mechal Shabbos for Asya. Elisha ben Avuya is walking into the Beis Medrash. Why? Because at the end of the day, he's insecure. Because at the end of the day, and we're going to learn about this more in next class, at the end of the day, as much as he says, I'm out, I'm done, I don't want this anymore, I have no interest in this anymore, it's not true. Deep down, there's an neshama in Elisha ben Avuya. Deep down, there's a fire burning in that soul. Deep down, there is still a man who believes. Deep down, there is still a man who wants Dveikus. Deep down, there is a man who feels tragically lost without his people. He can't say it, he can't acknowledge it for a variety of different reasons, but his insecurity manifests itself in his need to make everyone else believe like him and behave like him. All right, we'll stop over here for today. And Me'aretz Hashem, on Monday, we'll continue a little bit more. We'll see the insecurity come out, and we'll see that Elisha ben Avuya, although it sounds like he severed all of his ties to the Jewish people, we'll see that in fact there were a few that he kept.